Hey there, it's Ben. It's great to hear from our listeners on Twitter and Facebook, and also getting an email through tales@thehydianway.com. Currently, we're halfway through a spooky dungeon crawl on Heroes of the Hydian Way that you can jump in and listen to, even if you've never listened to any other hero stuff before. And finally, if you want to and are able to, you can help support the show at patreon.com/thehydianway so we can afford equipment replacements as they come up and to help make the show sound better. Thank you, and now on to the show. Coming out of hyperspace, I reach up to scratch the wing of my Bogwing. Wow, this ship is so much quieter when I'm flying it with a skeleton crew. At least I'm bringing this Corvette to the new hideout on a moon of Bogdan. I kick up my feet as the automatic pilot takes over for the approach.
Although grateful to have passage off of Port Touga, the stolen decorative mask I have on my arms has me concerned. I stop in front of the closed cockpit door. Ben, did I feel us leave hyperspace? And did I get around to telling you why I had to leave Port Touga in such a hurry?
This is going to be an obligatory tale from the Hydian Way. I'm your host, Ben Yendel.
With special guest Christine Chester.
This week, we have a special guest on Tales from the Hydian Way, Christine Chester, who I'm hoping most of you know as one of the players on Heroes of the Hydian Way and also the editor from there, which is a huge thing.
So much editing.
But you do also GM in your own right.
That's true.
One of the things that you've talked of, at least during downtime on Heroes, is you GM with obligation a lot.
Yes, I think out of the Star Wars games I've run, all except for one of them has been Edge of the Empire. And that's granted, that's from my players choosing to play Edge. They tend to like more the go off and get credits and fly around in a spaceship, more the Firefly vibe, if you will, than some of the others. But obligation also, as a bonus, is a perfect mechanic for my GMing style, because I tend to be less plot and setting oriented and tend to be more character stories, especially as I get going.
Okay.
I love it when players give me NPCs I can bring back into the fold and introduce in different ways and have circumstances change. The party I'm playing with right now, a group of five players, have given me so many bad guys to throw at them because three out of the five of them had some variation of bounty or criminal obligations. At start.
Nice. I've tried to run a mix one once. When the system came out, I ran an Edge campaign because, well, that's all we had at the time. And we liked it. To go with the old saw. I ran people through Beyond the Rim when it came out because, well, that seemed like a good way of getting them to know the system.
Mm-hmm.
Running obligation there, I've learned so much more as a GM since. And now, like, there's so much to obligation that is right there for making your characters the center of what's going on.
Well, anytime an obligation is rolled, that means that character's story in some way, shape, or form is going to enter the plot. Sometimes it's in very subtle ways. Sometimes it's, you know, you get wind that so-and-so is looking for you and you're more on guard. You're now waiting for that next encounter. Other times there's an entire plot that's formed around your obligation. Like, say, if you're an obsessed archaeologist and you happen to stumble across the site of a ancient civilization that may or may not have built the MacGuffin that you're looking for.
Yes. That can make things so much more fun. Are you dealing mostly with, like, having a... Like, you mentioned a MacGuffin, which implies that you have a major plot. And I use major in the story planning method as opposed to the this thing is bright flashing in front of the players, thou must do this all the time. How do you work in the obligation, the character stories, while still maintaining movement on the main plot?
Well, the thing I actually ended up doing is basically when I received my character's obligations, I selected one that has kind of become the main plot, in quotation marks, if you will. One of our characters is an archaeologist, and her obligation is the before-mentioned obsession, and all she told me is it's this thing called the Mind Stone. And I went, okay, that sounds cool. I can work with that. And right from session one, it's through that obligation, that character story is what led to them getting their ship. Because it used to belong to an old academic friend of hers who sadly got shot in the first couple of sessions, and they ended up claiming his ship for their own.
Okay.
And the Empire is looking for the Mind Stone. I've made my own, like, Renee Belloc version to her, to her Indiana Jones. That man is very vain and has been very vocal about his findings, at least what the Empire will let him publish. He's been constantly one step ahead of her, and so that's kind of informed the larger plot because it has those extra Imperial entanglements, and anytime they run across one of these precursor sites, a lot of stuff goes down. They've encountered two so far, and they know where a third one is.
That sounds kind of cool, like making one character's story the sort of main one that drags everyone else along. So how do you incorporate the other players' obligations into that?
Well, like, one thing I did is, so one of my players, the one who had a bounty obligation, she was a smuggler who did, like, the whole Han Solo thing.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't drop her cargo. Her ship got claimed by the Empire and basically melted down into scrap before session one. Then when the gangster whose spice got burned up with the ship came, or claimed by the Empire, came looking for payment, she basically told him off, wanted nothing to do with him. Like any good gangster, he promptly started sending bounty hunters after her. Then our most recent session, we actually tied those two plots together. They've been working for a while to lower her obligation because hers had actually increased a couple of times because she wasn't dealing with the problem. She would just kept running from it or dealing with any of the attacks as they came. And they finally sought out a member of the criminal organization and struck a deal to like have a meeting and negotiated terms. One of the leadership of this group bought out essentially the money that she owed, and her bounty obligation turned into a favor obligation. The deal was for 3 favors, then their slate would be wiped clean. And the first favor was to try to check out and get rid of the Empire's presence on one of their planets, a planet where they were doing some of their illicit business. They didn't want the Empire to find their base, so hey, you guys are expendable. Why don't you go out there and get rid of them? And it happened to be the Empire was here because of a precursor site.
Okay. The way that you're weaving these together, so one obligation weaves into an effect that affects someone else's obligation, so it turns into a true weave, or almost a braid of obligations.
It starts to become that, because even then we had a third one enter when, because the dealing with the Imperial base took 2 sessions. And on the following session, our Force-sensitive mechanics obligation rolled. And so then I gave our Belloc equivalent a Force companion. And I have reasons for why she was accompanying him, because Force potential does tie into the, like, archaeological mystery. And that gave him a whole other concern, because he doesn't want to be found out. He's trying to stay off of the Empire's radar.
Understandably. That's a very interesting and very organic way of doing it, and I personally, I love that idea of, well, this person's obligation tripped, you have an idea of what their old obligation is part of, and from that, something from that is now showing up there. Whether it's they're passing through Ord Mantell and someone sent a bounty hunter after them, or whether, like what you're talking, they go to an Imperial site and the person who's normally menacing this one player character, they have a assistant who is the nemesis of someone else in the party.
Mm-hmm.
This sort of goes back to the idea of Star Wars and role-playing games in general. They're not telling a slice of life story. This is a bigger than life story. It is something that is gigantic in scope and scale. Like, sure, it may start off with some whiny little farmer who's getting some mechanical help off of it, the traveling junk sailors. Okay, it starts off with that, and then go through 2 movies, and the second planet-destroying space station is getting blown up by his friends. The scope is huge.
Yeah, things can change very quickly. Like, this has still been a relatively small crew I've been dealing with, but they've been building up their notoriety as we've gone along. And two, they've had so many, well, they've had 100 obligation for months and months. It's been like 7 months. And they finally lowered it this last session down to a 94. That's that's how things have gone for them.
From that, there's a few questions that immediately pop into my and probably most listeners' minds. Mm-hmm. Now, for those of you who don't know, once you pass 100 obligation, the party is supposed to not be able to spend experience. In theory, they can keep gaining it, but everything is preying on the party's mind so much, they are not allowed to spend XP.
Yeah, they're constantly beset by problems, which is exactly how this has played out for this group. And for, it's been interesting for me as a GM, because every week somebody's obligation has to activate. Something has to happen. There's no breaks. So I have 5 players, and we started off with 3, and 2 more joined along the way. And like all players, they all loaded up on max obligation.
Yeah, of course.
Which together would have put them at exactly 100. So I did decide that, okay, for me, 101 is where is the tipping point. That's where you can't spend XP, because I didn't want them to hate the new guy.
Well, that in the end, that just sort of seems fair.
You know, they had the 100 obligation, and then naturally, about 2 sessions later, they crossed a crime boss and upped their obligation to 130. It skyrocketed.
Ouch.
And then they couldn't spend XP for a couple of months there. Like, they accrued quite a bit of XP, and it was also painful for me on the GM side of seeing that number go up and knowing, oh, they can't spend it, and then I'm constantly throwing problems at them. And it was this real rat race trying to get that number down to the point where they had some breathing room.
To me, that just shouts out what the obligation mechanic is supposed to do. It's something you can never actually work off unless you're changing mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
Say you're going from obligation to duty. It's at that point where you can finally let it drop. But going by rules as written, you're never really supposed to completely drop off obligation.
Like, right.
One obligation subsumes another or something like that.
And they do evolve and change over time.
Exactly. To go up to 130, so much is happening. Like, this is half of hut space or something equivalent coming after them. They have so much attention on them. It's supposed to be, everyone's freaked out. Oh no, when will the next bounty hunter show up? Oh no, when will this Imperial Antiquities agent show up? Now there's a gangster after us? Like, how can this crew not be pretty much freaked out?
Something I would want to talk to you about.
Okay.
And the whole obligation thing. So you have all these different types, which is something I've always loved. That you can have the one person who's suffering from a spice addiction, and then you can have the one person who, you know, is a wanted criminal by the Empire, and things like that. And I have to say, the two hardest obligations I have found to run, at least if they're... It depends on how they're worded, but the two obligations that have caused me the most creative challenge have been Duty Bound and Oath, where I think those things need to be very carefully defined. Like, one of my players has an Oath of the Bounty Hunter's Code. You know, it's pretty comprehensive. It covers a number of different situations. Thus far, I had one interesting idea, which I already played out, which is the whole idea of a bounty hunter must render aid to another hunter if asked. Most of this guy's fellow crewmates have bounties on their heads.
Okay.
And so I was able to kind of pit him against the party and kind of pull him out of the scenario where he was trying to uphold the code to the best of his ability, but not hurt any of his fellow crew members.
Mm-hmm.
And we went through that, but like, I don't have any other ideas for that one and how to incorporate it in interesting ways, because it's not expressly tied to any NPCs or any groups or any moments in that character's life.
Yeah, that would be a fairly hard one to get sort of story ideas around, especially duty bound to the bounty hunters. Because, that sort of uses up the sort of obvious one. Sure, maybe not the party, but have someone that the party needs to entreat with be a bounty that needs to come in.
Mm-hmm.
having it so that they need to let this person that they're dealing with go. I guess that's sort of coming down to what sort of code is there with being in the bounty hunters. The sort of reverse of that does kind of immediately pop into my head as I start thinking of codes.
Oh?
With the bounty hunters. You must help a hunter that's in need of help. The other thing is you can't get in the way of someone else's hunt.
Yes.
If, kind of like what you were saying, but the idea of the group then needing to fulfill their own bounty on someone, like collect on a bounty for whatever reasons that another hunter is going for, that already has sort of a previous claim on.
The idea of, again, them having to step aside, though, which that can work. My only fear is I don't want it to be, hey, you have to sit this one out and let the non-hunters and the crew go do their thing.
I can totally see that.
See, it's a tricky one.
It's one of those things of, it's at that point where you make it so that the players can't sit it out. The characters have to be in there.
Mm-hmm. You try to make it a conflict.
Yeah, like that's kind of the whole thing.
You know, one of the ways I've viewed it, or at least I prepared for this contingency, had that character broken his oath in one of the situations, then I think that's a prime opportunity for his obligation, or at least part of it, to morph.
Okay, yeah.
To change into something else, like, hey, you've got this damaged reputation. Like, one of the things that we have been building up as we've been going along, because this player is a fan of, like, the old Legends, like Bounty Hunter Guild and that whole setup. So we kind of mix and match canon and legends in my campaign. And he, you know, the idea is still that Boba Fett destroyed the Bounty Hunters Guild, and he hates Boba Fett because he's also a Mandalorian, that whole thing. And so we've kind of split into, there's two kinds of hunters. There's the old school, we still follow the rules, you know, we do X, Y, and Z, of which he is a part of. And then there are the new hunters who are just out to make a buck. And so my idea was, you know, hey, if he broke this, it would damage his reputation among some of those older hunters. Kind of he starts crossing the line a little bit.
Obligations, especially when it's like duty bound, one of the things with obligations, you don't necessarily have to have it being entirely true. The things that are getting back to him. So having a message from, say, Zuckuss getting back to him saying, I have heard that you have crossed line with the creed and are now needing to, and we're no longer going to be upholding following the creed when it comes to our dealings with you. Having it so that they think, like, it does kind of morph into a falsely accused kind of obligation, but it does also work as a, I must clear my name.
I can see that. That could definitely work as a means to kind of reestablish that.
Yeah.
Or even that could be a whole thing of maybe there are those false accusations being made.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still a plot along the way of, no, I never broke the oath. I got to prove this. I got to go after you kind of thing. I've got to set things straight.
Yeah, exactly. And it could be by someone who has a bounty on their head. And yeah, it could be by like an old rival or something like that, that possibly has either an Imperial or it's the Underworld. Anyone who's making that sort of a claim is going to have a bounty on them for something.
Or somebody who just wants to bring him out of the woodwork to either maybe hire him or needs answers to a specific situation that happened.
Like trying to get information on a previous bounty that he's fulfilled. And in doing this, makes it so that you have to come out of the woodwork. Otherwise, they are going to keep slandering you.
Right. Oh, I like that.
And the really fun part on top of that is you have to capture and you have to deal with this person. Otherwise, the slander is still out there. You can't get rid of that notion that's out there unless the person making the notion goes against it.
Right. You've got to try to reverse the damage and also not make it seem like, hey, I'm just coercing this guy into telling my story.
Exactly. Like, I'm not going out and shooting this guy because, well, he's saying the wrong things about me. Like, that creates a completely different message, but...
Yeah, I like that. That's an interesting way to think about it, because I haven't thought about it so much from the need to preserve that reputation from the outside, and that's something I can play around with more.
There is a lot to, okay, I've given an oath, and I must uphold this oath. But when it's to something as mercurial as, say, the Bounty Hunter's Code,
Mm-hmm.
There's not a whole heck of a lot to the Bounty Hunter's Code.
Yeah.
There really isn't much there.
It's one of those things of, in hindsight, I wish I had talked to my player and set it up to be maybe a motivation more than his obligation.
Honestly, I spent an entire session going over my player character's obligations in my most recent incarnation of the Thursday night game. Asking them, going over with them, okay, these are the starting obligations. You guys are totaling up to 100, so like your characters.
5 players as well?
Yes.
Yep, yeah, because if they all take max obligation, which every player does, always, then yeah, that gets you right up to 100.
There's no reason for a Edge of the Empire character not to take max obligation.
It's beautiful. You get XP or credits, and you get more chance for your story to be told.
Well, exactly. And I did the same sort of thing. Well, okay, anything above, like, 101 obligation, you're going to have it so that you guys can't spend XP. So the first couple sessions have got to be you guys attempting to pay this down.
Yes.
But from a mechanical standpoint, I don't see a reason not to. It's along the lines of, why would anyone in Age of Rebellion start off with duty sitting around? It's like you're leaving experience or money on the table. Like, I don't get that. Now, sure, there are some things with duty that obligation doesn't do that can be considered an actual benefit. Mm-hmm. And also in Force and Destiny, the same basic character creation concept is still there, but you don't get a choice. It's you get to move your morality, or you have money or experience. You don't get a choice of doing nothing.
I completely agree with that. I think that's why players are... There's really no reason not to. I have seen players decide not to before, but it's usually new players who are still understanding the game, and usually I kind of encourage, hey, just go ahead and get those credits, get that XP. It's going to help you out more in the long run. Now, you mentioned something I thought would be an interesting topic. You're talking about paying down obligation. With your group, is it more just they need to spend some credits in order to get those numbers down, or is it more they have to do like certain things, they have to accomplish certain missions?
Okay, with this crew,
mm-hmm.
there are some interesting obligations. Two of the crew do have the very amazingly classic obligation of they owe money. They owe money on their ship.
Let me guess, for the ship, yep. And that they both do? Like a partnership kind of thing?
Yeah, essentially two of them signed for the ship, and they owe Black Sun money. Not quite the Huts, but honestly, most of the time I prefer to owe Huts money versus Black Sun.
Yeah. There's no contest there. I mean, Huts might enslave you, or maybe send a bounty hunter after you. Black Sun will ruin your day. So this is interesting to me that you have two players with the same obligation for the same source. So if they do start paying it down, how do you lower their respective obligations? Like, is it going to be one and then the other, or are you going to kind of jump a point back and forth?
Essentially, yes. In the very first session, they paid down the debt on the ship by 3,000 credits. They owed...
Wow.
Yeah, I think they owed 30 grand on the ship. I've got it written down somewhere.
That's fair.
They paid 10% of it off. So, well, I'm having them... Or, no, it was 20,000 because they have 20 obligation in this. So because of this, okay, 3,000, that's 2 obligation off of one guy and 1 obligation off of one girl.
Okay.
Like, paying it down equitably that way. Now, other obligations like a duty-bound Kuzo heavy, something like that is going to come up, and it's not going to be something they can pay down. They're going to have to figure out how to deal with that otherwise.
Right. What kind of duty bound?
It's kind of like the family style obligation where he's a Kuzo. So with that, there's a lot of the clan to it. So his duty bound is trying to restore a bit of the family name. Like, the guy currently has 3 different obligations because...
At 3? At start?
Well, it actually makes sense.
Okay.
And it's like different aspects to the same thing. This is a heavy who had been running with a crew and then fell out with that crew and became part of the player group. Duty bound is because the group that he had been with then essentially turned dark and were starting to go around and be pirates, and in a very...
dishonorable?
Yeah, in a very dishonorable sort of way. His name, which is associated with this mercenary crew, this pirate crew, is now being dragged through the mud for him.
Huh.
So he's got criminal, because he's a known associate to this pirate crew. He's got duty bound of actually going after this crew. He's got former associates of, well, he's been betrayed by this crew. It's all different aspects of the same...
The same scenario, which...
Yeah, it's like the same group, the same cause of it, but different aspects of it sort of show up.
Okay, so that's an interesting way to take it, because I tend to run starting obligation as from the book, where a player shouldn't have more than one or two obligations at start. You shouldn't split it more than that way. I like that it's all kind of around the same topic, though, because like add some unity to their story that makes it a little easier than, well, so-and-so has... you know, three different kinds of obligations, and we're telling really three different stories with that character.
Yeah.
This is more, yeah, which facet is turning towards you.
That was the only way that I was willing to go with three different kinds.
Okay.
Generally, I'm the same. It's, you can have a sort of current obligation and a historical obligation, and otherwise, that's about it.
Yeah.
Like, for me, it just becomes so much of, okay, which plate do I have spinning this time for what shows up? And yeah, that group is going to be... As of this recording, I'm looking at their second session. So by the time this comes out, we'll be past the third one.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a very interesting delay into what I think could happen versus what is going to happen. Especially considering they're chasing a rannet.
Yeah. Oh, rannets. You don't see enough of them.
All because I had been watching Freemakers.
So something else that came to my mind as you were talking about it is the idea of obligation as a resource for the player group. It's always something I've loved is the connection it has with, well, credits. Like you mentioned, you know, they owe 20,000 on their ship, and so that was 20 obligation.
Yeah.
Likewise, for my players, I think it was actually a little bit more, but they got somewhere in the ballpark of 30,000 credits selling a whole bunch of Class 1 hyperdrives, but those hyperdrives, then they knew this going into it. They had targeted and hit a a crime boss on the planet that they were on, one of his shipments. He was purposely smuggling out a set of Class 1 hyperdrives. And they went in, they took out most of the crew except for the one guy there who had a bounty on his head. So they're like, oh, double payday, we'll turn this guy in. And we'll get the hyperdrives. Well, then said guy goes, you know, gets eventually, you know, found and released and goes report to his boss. Hey, I have descriptions of the exact people who ripped us off.
Not thinking of it yet.
Yeah. And so when the party turned those, they actually sold them to the Rebel Alliance. And so 15 points of their obligation came from that. The other 15 came from the Empire jumped in on the meat and ID'd their ship.
Ooh.
Which was it was just a bad situation. And then that's when they went to the 130 and they had so much money to spend. They could buy all of these toys, couldn't spend XP.
That's a very creative and interesting way of doing it.
It forced them to actually spend some of that money just removing some of the obligation. They hired a slicer and bought a new ID for their ship.
Okay.
Essentially how they got rid of a lot of it, a lot of the, at least the Imperial side of, okay, you know what? We really don't need 30,000 credits. We're going to pay 15 and we're going to get this ID. We're going to get this work done. And we're going to try to make it our ship look like something different because we don't want to give it up. Which is another option that they considered. And that at least got them down to 115 relatively quickly, but then they were stuck for a little bit.
No, I absolutely can understand that. And, okay, the question I've got for you is, okay, they're stuck at 115, they can't really spend, like, they're not able to spend XP, how do you keep them coming back? Because as a player, I kind of feel a bit frustrated by that. Especially if I'm keep on accruing it.
The main thing I did, once that happened, I myself was a little frustrated because it's no fun as the GM either withholding that. And, you know, I give an ample warning because I knew it was going to happen. Just all the writing was on the wall. I knew they weren't going to turn back and try to make amends before they loaded up with credits and got rid of the merchandise.
Mm-hmm.
Then that was just a conversation point. And I tried to make sure there were opportunities. One of the players had, the same one who had the bounty obligation, had a weird take on a criminal obligation. She looked very similar to this wanted arsonist.
Okay.
So it was like a case of mistaken identity. She set that up from the start. And I had, the last time that obligation had rolled, I introduced that character. Like, they actually ran into each other. And it was like, oh, you're so-and-so. Well, this guy sent a couple of bounty hunters after me, and I killed them for you. But, you know, I don't know what's happening there. And they turned on that character because they went, oh, wait a minute. She's not a good person. She's wanted for other crimes. Can we use her in some way to lower our obligation? That's exactly what they did. They went after her and wheeled and dealed and had a, like, I think the toughest fight they've had where everybody was badly injured because they went after, you know, this girl and her crew, where they were very, very good at what they did, and it became this whole situation, but they knew, like, they had their target set on, here's how we're going to lower our obligation, here's how we're going to get to spend XP, and I was still giving them XP every time, they just couldn't spend it, so they were seeing that number go up and up, and so as soon as they were successful in that and got to spend it. Oh, the table was so happy.
Oh, I can imagine. You describing that, and so far we haven't really mentioned a TV show, which is one of my things, apparently.
Which TV show are you going to mention this time, Ben?
I'm going to go with one that sadly is recently canceled and is somewhat hard to get through the first season.
Dark Matter.
Yes. Because it seems like every single episode in the first two seasons that I've seen is based on someone's obligation.
Do they have obligation? They don't have their memories.
They have history, which is what obligation is.
But they don't even know what those obligations are.
Exactly.
Okay.
So just sort of imagine your characters are starting up and you're being given a character sheet and it has marked down an obligation of this. Like, an obligation of debt for 10. You've got 10 obligation of debt. You've got no idea what it's for. You just know that it can come up. And then, a couple sessions down the line, it gets rolled. Now you guys just get a random call from one of the people who used to give you missions. Like, used to just give you contracts. And now, they're expecting you to do this. Why? Because they know you are massively in debt.
I'm making a face right now, and it's for a couple of reasons.
Okay.
I like some of where you're going with this, and I dislike other parts. The parts I dislike about the idea of, like, starting up and maybe, like, a player doesn't know what an obligation is. I like players to have a handle and identifying their own stories and telling parts of it. But then you can still have, you can have your cake and eat it too. You can have the other side. One of my players has a criminal obligation and he built a few characters, like his, essentially like the team. He got caught and they didn't, like his old, like, heist team.
Mm-hmm.
And those characters are out there and we're going to interact with them someday. When his obligation has rolled, I've actually been introducing other NPCs. Like, oh, this is the guy who arrested you. And he's been keeping tabs on you because of XYZ. Where it's a facet of it he didn't know,
mm-hmm.
or didn't know that was going to pop back up as a part of his obligation for that nice little surprise, but it's not the whole thing that he didn't know about.
That's one of the things about Dark Matter that doesn't really work that well, but it also sort of shows up. For a campaign style, I could see that working well, but there would have to be a huge amount of trust between the players and the GM that the GM is actually going to tell a good story about it.
Indeed.
But the basic concept of the player's history is coming back and something every session is coming up to bite them. That's obligation. Like, that's almost the textbook of obligation. That it's going in a campaign that's not exactly conducive to this having a lot of player agency, at least at the outset. Yeah, I can totally see where reservations would be. As a GM, if I was wanting to do that campaign, there'd be discussions ahead of time. So that our listeners aren't entirely lost. The crew of this ship wake up, they have no idea what's gone on, and they then start having to figure out why they aren't going to fight themselves. They've got some amazing fighters on there, and what are they going to do? Like, what are they going to do for money and that sort of stuff? And then their history keeps coming back and biting them and biting them and biting them because they're no longer the people that they had been. If I was going to do that, like sort of to set up these obligations, you'd almost want to have like a session zero discussing who were these people before they had their memories wiped.
Right.
The players are still getting a bit of input into what these obligations are.
Right. And that way, too, they could purposely play off of something. Like, maybe before a character was, you know, this gruff mercenary soldier did all these terrible things, and then after their memory was wiped, I'm a changed man now. You know, I don't want to do any of that stuff anymore. Like, you can set up different arcs that way.
There's a lot of story opportunity to that. As I say, the thing that just sort of jumps out at me is they use an obligation style to it very effectively.
Right. It seems like the right crew for it, too.
Especially considering none of them are likable.
Yeah, that's what killed me on the show.
It's what kills me on so many others. I was able to find one in there that I kind of liked and was wanting to watch through.
All it takes is one character, and I just didn't find that in like the 5 or 6 episodes I watched. Okay, here's one other facet of obligation we haven't touched upon yet, and one I actually don't even have much experience with myself. When doubles are rolled.
As I said, I haven't really done that much with it, and apparently my crew, in the past, has not been great at rolling doubles. And this is a thing where it's almost like a triumph is rolled on obligation or duty, mm-hmm. where you get, instead of losing the 2 strain from your strain threshold and everyone else losing 1, it's doubled. So 4 strain off of your total for the one it triggers on and 2 for everyone else. And it's at that point where, narrative-wise, that's my pivot point. That's where we had been running this one person's obligation as the primary driving force. Well, now for the next few sessions, this other person is sort of taking over. At least that's what it sort of jumps out to me as.
I agree with that. I think something monumental needs to happen. Like, that almost seems like the perfect opportunity to set something up where the obligation is going to change to another kind, or a new threat is introduced.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's when, for now, I did this in a different way, but for my force-sensitive mechanic, who has a criminal obligation, that's exactly when I would put an Inquisitor on his tail.
Using that sort of thought, the movie version of that is, this character has a debt obligation to said hut. All of a sudden, doubles are rolled.
The worst possible time.
The Empire decides to get in, and they need this person found, so they collect up some of the best bounty hunters to send them after. Yeah, you're right. Creating a new threat. Creating a much more deadly threat, or something that is worth the 4 strain threshold.
Yeah, because that is a lot. That hurts.
Just taking a look at this one assassin that I happen to have in front of me, that would reduce the strain threshold from 12 down to 8.
Ugh.
Yeah, as soon as you get down into the single digits for a character, that's brutal.
I think that's also a great role-playing opportunity for that player because, I mean, 4 strain gone off your threshold, like, the pressure that character is under, that's when said character, because XYZ happened, you know, might lash out at a crew member, or it has to try to deal with it in some way. I don't know how, you know, however they normally cope with stress. It's just an opportunity to play that up as, this is a really bad day for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially as these circumstances are changing. How do they get past that? And how do they rely upon their crewmates? Because the other thing is, everybody else has got lowered by 2.
Yeah.
You know, they are being affected in ways too. How are they helping? How are they being affected by this person's burdens?
And one of the things that just sort of shows up with it is, it really shows off how this is the stress mechanic. It isn't just this mental second pull that is kind of like wounds, but kind of not, because you don't take a crit when it goes below 0.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much of a roleplay basis behind it, where you're right. Like, okay, I've just taken 4 strain. How is my character dealing with this? I can't recover it this session. How do I deal? As much as it skews the GM's way that they're playing and what they're introducing in this session, the players also should be dealing with some effect of this. Like, how is my character dealing with this? This has just come to the front of my character's brain. How is this affecting the way my character's dealing with everything else? Because life doesn't stop for him.
Yeah. You're just thinking about what you're going to do to all of your players when doubles are rolled, aren't you?
Pretty much. And I'm also mildly cringing, thinking of what would happen in Heroes when doubles are rolled.
That's pretty much the whole other topic, is how do you incorporate obligation into a pre-published adventure? Like, on Heroes, duty is, like, more in the background. Like, we still try to, at least I know I try to add a role-play element why are their wounds increased? You know, it has us seek out objectives, but I guess duty always feels more on the players, where obligation puts a lot more in the GM's hands.
Like, this is going to be an upcoming Tales episode at some point in the nearish future, where it's how do you adapt a module to work on your table. So they've got three Edge of the Empire modules out there currently. Beyond the Rim, Jewel of Yavin, and Mask of the Pirate Queen. All have their advantages, disadvantages, and all of them have pretty interesting stories. Like, Mask of the Pirate Queen is one of those ones where it's got some great fake-outs to it. All three of them I kind of recommend. The trick of putting your own obligations in is tying the obligations that your characters have into what's going on in the module. Kind of like with Heroes, if I were to be running an Edge campaign from a pre-published module, I would have the characters created for that module, and I would have the backgrounds tied into what should be there in the module. It may be something in the last couple pages, it could be something that they're going to immediately trip into, but kind of like how it had been described way at the beginning, was braiding it in.
Right.
So that the obligation makes sense for this module.
It has to be an ingredient at the start.
Like, they could be trying to pay it off, and I say pay off as in reduce the obligation. I'm just sort of thinking of Jewel of Yavin, where you've got this racer section to it.
Yes.
You could have something where the pilot has a horrible name and is infamous for this horrible crash. Well, they pay it off by doing really well in this race.
And that's an opportunity along the way to add in characterization or even to tweak some characters in the module. For example, if you have that racer and his obligation is rolled earlier, well, then that's when you run into one of the racers along the way and you start getting laughed at and, oh, wait a minute, you know, so-and-so, you know, is here. Oh, don't tell me you're going to compete in the race. Do you even have a cloud pod?
Yeah.
Kind of thing you can play up. That could be a great way to introduce, like, some of the other racers they eventually deal with, some of the other teams, add that greater sense of rivalry to it.
Exactly. Like, that's how I would attempt to deal with obligation in a pre-published adventure. You gotta push it to the front. I didn't do this when I ran Beyond the Rim because I wasn't thinking at the time. It would have made things so much better. The only thing that I really think that I did well with obligation in Beyond the Rim was they didn't deal with the captain, the sort of Robinson Crusoe'd crew, and he was going to be coming back as a recurring villain because the party had taken his town away from him, and now he was going to be revenging himself upon them. And then they all got killed off by Aranta. So very sad. So, Christine, the question I kind of want to end off on for you is, what would be a piece of advice or a couple pieces of advice for dealing with obligation for people who are unsure of it or have looked at it and thought that it's too complicated, too story destroying?
Okay, so a few things. The first one is, when you are creating obligation, that needs to be something that's collaborative with you and your players. Like, one of the things I did, granted this was because we were online and not everybody had books, but I helped every one of my players make their characters. There was a back and forth for, what obligation are you thinking of? Oh, well, we could do, you know, this or that, or do you mind if I change something? You can't be afraid to add on or to change aspects of it along the way with the player's permission. For example, the academic buddy of my archaeologist at the start. That was something I cleared with her. Hey, do you mind if I give you this friend as kind of our starting point?
Okay.
That back and forth is huge. look for opportunities as you're crafting your adventures for where could somebody's obligation go. And something else I recommend as this little bit of a house rule, I actually rotate through. So I actually will mark what obligations have been used as we're going along. I want there to be a mix of them. That way we're rotating through and covering everybody's story. I don't force specific roles, but I might re-roll if say, oh, well, we've done three of her sessions relatively quickly and we haven't yet done so-and-so. I'm going to re-roll and see if we're going to land on somebody else.
Okay. I guess since you're rolling, it doesn't make sense to be messing too much around with the table of things. Like putting one abnormally high, or as you deal with them, they go to the bottom of the pile.
Now, I wouldn't adjust your chart that much. It can get complicated enough as it is. I'll just do something like for right now where I am, we've actually run through all but two of our obligations recently, and those are between 10 and 14% and 60 and 79. And I think I had first rolled like a 34 or something like that, which was literally the obligation we just dealt with. And so I just re-rolled and I got in that 60 to 79 range. So, oh, cool. All right. Well, let's tell that story. Just to keep things moving and make sure everybody gets their share of the spotlight. The other thing is play around with the obligations even when they're not rolled. Like you can have opportunities present itself. Like, here's this one, like from A New Hope. It could even be that Han Solo's debt obligation wasn't rolled. It could be the GM just had it planned that Jabba would be there waiting because it had been a while or wanted to introduce that character at the start. You know, those things can happen along the way. That way, even when your obligation isn't rolled, you can help tell those stories or have plots shaped around them. And that's why I'm worried Shula the Hutt is going to send someone to look for it. While Ben looks the strange mask over, I nervously look out the cockpit window. Hey, Ben, is that what I think it is?
I peer out the window and see the oncoming cruiser. Huh, why ain't that a thing? Guess those engineers on the Purga will see if they could get that axial cannon up and running. I flip to the cruise encrypted comms. We have uninvited guests. Find out if we're able to repel firepower of that magnitude in the next tale from the Hydean Way. You can find show updates on Twitter at the Hydean Way, and I'm at Deuterium Ice.
You can find me on Twitter at 12th Knight, that's 12th Knight with a K, and whirl at thehydeanway.com, where you can find previous episodes, links to things we talk about on the show, and our live play podcast, Heroes of the Hydean Way. Our podcast is on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, where you can find more episodes. And you can help us out by rating and reviewing the show.
Drop us a holocom at tales@thehydeanway.com. We're also on Facebook as Tales from the Hydean Way. If you like what we do and want to support the show, you can find us at patreon.com/thehydeanway. Give me one quick sec. Because as we're talking about obligations, I remembered, for the Thursday night group, we were supposed to roll at the end of the episode or session, but didn't.
Oh no, I forgot to mention that because I tend to think of that as a standard now. Always roll at the end, not the beginning. That way you can pre-plan. And also it gets players excited. Like my, Jeff, whose obligation's coming up next time, is like, he's pumped because it's been a while. And he's like, oh yeah, it's going to be my story.